And tonight, we just want to get through, we discussed lawyers last week, as I recall. You know, we tried to be even-handed for the lawyers, you know, for the lawyers and the anti-lawyers, you know, in the audience. You know, the Ra'ah against the Ramban, you know, it's not so easy. But to at least to identify some of the considerations. And tonight, I want to go just quickly through some of the Gemaras. We've seen some of these, but I just want to connect them up to get to our next bigger topic, which is going to be on Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. So let's just go through on Lamed Amud Aleph. Again, I'm going to do this quickly. Every one of these topics really could take us a long time, but we want to get through the Perek. So you'll excuse me if I kind of, you know, shortchange some of these topics. But is there a way to get a from the other room, Avos, with Rambam and Perush Mishnayos? Okay, so the last thing we discussed was the issue of representation, either a shliach bezdin or especially an antler, which is kind of like a lawyer. And we discussed it from two perspectives, one from a pragmatic point of view, meaning maximizing honesty and integrity and truth in the judicial process. In other words, the likelihood that you know, somebody who's arguing or present, thank you so much, thank you, somebody who's presenting the case will either be more or less capable, or in terms of scruples, right? Einan ameyaz panam b'fnei balchov on the one hand, and you know, einan misarev b'riv lo on the other hand. It kind of balances itself up. So that's one perspective. When we're talking about lawyers and whether or not it's preferred, it's neutral, or it's just problematic to have lawyers, and some of the factors that go into that. And then the second perspective, which is more intriguing in some respect, and that is that there may be formal requirements to hear directly from the baldavar, and this implies that a baldavar is not merely the trigger for a din Torah, meaning the hechatimtzi for a din Torah, but the role of Bali Dvarim in Din Torah is part of the process, meaning there are different roles that are played. We understand that Dayanim is a role, that Edom is a role. The relationship between Edom and Dayanim itself is fascinating. Ened Nasa Dayan may speak to that according to some of the explanations. But the idea that Bali Dinim also are a part of the system, meaning that their role is formalized, is extremely important. And that's really what the Ritva and the Ra'ah seem to be saying, that partly the Gzeres HaKasuv of V'omdu Shneu Anashim Asher Lehem Ariv Lifnei Hashem. So the idea that somebody could, you'd have to justify someone standing in for him on the basis of Shlichus, and maybe there's a difference between Tovea and Nitva, and so on. So there are a lot of interesting issues that come up in that context. The question of Mipiyam V'lo Mipi Meturgaman, Mipiyam V'lo Mipiksavam. These are ideas that we're very well acquainted with when it comes to Edim, and understandably so, because again, Edus clearly is a formal function in Beis Din. So the idea that, you know, some modes yes, some modes no, possibly Davar Shebegufo, not something that is nitan, that it can be accomplished through representation, is very, very reasonable. But the idea that Bali Dinim also, you know, have to be directly conveying, you know, their tale, and that Maturgaman is excluded, maybe even Ksav Yad is unacceptable, or at least sending in a Ksav or Michtav about the, you know, the Taina of the Baldavar. So these are all very interesting issues. The possibility of distinguishing between Kohen Gadol, Isha, based on Kol Kvud Bas Melech Pnima, Talmud Chacham, whether they, you know, have different status, either with regard to a judicial house call, in other words, sending somebody from the court to collect the story, or even, again, the more ambitious idea of a lawyer, hiring somebody or appointing somebody to represent you, that there might be differences between Isha and Anashim, between Talmidei Chachamim and not between Kohen Gadol and everybody else. These are some of the issues that we were exploring and which seem to have important repercussions. So along those lines, it's interesting to move on to the next Gemara. And I say the little vignettes that we're going to discuss today, each one can be spoken of, you know, extensively, because our Rishonim and a lot of things to say about each one, but I really do want to get to Lamed Aleph from Aleph. So you'll excuse me for just giving a few short, I guess, drive-by treatment to some of this. The Gemara says here, Tanu Rabbanan ba'amdu shnei anashim. This is, you see where it says Tehillim Mem Hei, it's two lines below that. So Tanu Rabbanan ba'amdu shnei anashim, mitzvah lebalei dinim, right, she yamdu. So this actually fits in perfectly with some of the issues that we were just exploring. That the Bali, what is the posture, literally, of the Bali Dinim in the courtroom? And as we'll see, Edim and the Bali Dinim are supposed to be standing, preferably, in the olden days. The Rambam says we don't do this anymore. Not so clear why. The Chachmei Ashkenaz, quoted in the Mordechai, suggests that this has to do with the presence of Dayanim Smuchim, you know, and the status of Elohim, that we talked about so much 2 years ago when we learned Sanhedrin. But either way, the ideal, let's say, in a real Beis Din anyway, and possibly still in Batei Dinim, is V'amdu Shnei Anashim Mitzvah L'Bali Dinim Sheyamdu, a mitzvah that the Bali Dinim stand. So again, is that stance kind of psychological, just to remind them, you know, who they are relative to the Dayanim, or to, you know, to, you know, maybe, you know, to be Matil, Ema a little bit, you know, so that they will feel a little bit of pressure, right, understanding where they are, you know, to be scrupulous, you know, about telling the truth? Or is this something more formal? Maybe, again, what we were just talking about, just like they might not be able to be represented so easily, and just like the mode of how they convey their story, right, to Maturgaman, Mipiksavam, are circumscribed, so maybe too the way that they, you know, appear in Beis Din is important, right? There's a formal requirement of Amida. We'll see that. Not going to discuss this extensively, but the Rishonim al Atar, when they talk about Edim in particular, Edim b'Yeshiva, Bali Dinim b'Amida. I'm sorry, Dayanim b'Yeshiva, Edim b'Amida. So Edim Bamida in particular is very fascinating, because if you look at the Gemara in Zvachim, on Daf Tez Zayin, Omer Aleph, the Gemara in Zvachim talks about the requirement of standing in the context of Avoda, La Moda L'Shares. And there's a comparison there to the Gemara goes back and forth. The Gemara wants to know what about this psul and that psul. The Gemara in the beginning of Zvachim speaks about various psulim. So the Gemara speaks about the psul of Bamum, and psul of a person who's not wearing a big day kahuna. So at one point the Gemara says, well, compare it to the psul of Yoshev, like if a person does the avoda, and he is not standing, but he's sitting. So the Gemara says, well, you can't really compare it to Yoshev, can you? After all, you know, Edom also have a din of yeshiva, you know, so maybe it's a more expansive kind of a din. The point I'm trying to make is, the Gemara in Zvachim Tezayin seems to suggest that there's a parallel between the requirement of Amida in Avoda, in Avodas HaKarbanos, and Amida of the Edim in Beis Din. Very surprising. I mean, almost, you know, as if to say that that's also a kind of, you know, Lamod, you know, Ula Sharis. So the Gemara in the end, you know, is Doche, the particular you know, point that they want to make. It's not so clear that it's doche completely that idea. And then the Rishonim there in Zvachim, and the Riaz in Masechet Sanhedrin and Ben Yerucham, there are a few shitas that suggest, maybe even b'diavad, that Edim Ba'amida would be Ma'akev. The Balei Tosfos, the Ramban, most of the Rishonim are the opinion that b'diavad Edim Ba'amida is not Ma'akev. So there are very few Rishonim who think that it's Ma'akev. Of the ones that think that it's not Ma'akev, they also throw into the mix Dayanim b'Yeshiva and Balei Dinim b'Amida. Meaning, just to make it clear, so there are three, as we'll see in a moment, there are three preferred postures in the Beis Din system. The Dayanim should be sitting, the Einim should be standing, the Baal Yidim should be standing. The part I'm trying to make is that the Gemara discusses that, Vayam Lishnei Noshim Bedin, the Gemara is discussing it here. But and we'll continue to discuss the Dayanim part, the Einim part, etc. But based on the Gemara in Zvachim, which considered the equation when it comes to Edim, between Edim Ba'amida, the Bezdin, and Kohen Ba'amida in the Avoda, it sounds like this is more than simply Emas Bezdin, or just showing the contrast between the roles, because that's irrelevant to Amida or Yeshiva in Avodas HaKarbonos, in the Avodas HaKahuna. So when the Gemara in Zvachim says, this sounds really, really serious, but you should know that it's not Ma'akev B'dieved, and the Gemara, the Bali Tosas throw in the Hu Adin, and this is true, and sometimes they say the Hu Adin, and sometimes they say the Kol Shekain, which is also really interesting. The same thing is true about the Dayanim B'Yeshiva, the same thing is true about the Bali Dinim B'Amida. It sounds like what they're saying is that if it had been, if the Edim B'Amida were Ma'akev, and it's quite possible that that would be true for Dayanim B'Yeshiva and even for Bali Dinim B'Amida. So there is a very seemingly exaggerated requirement here of, of everybody, exactly, playing their role perfectly. We'll see in a moment that that is particularly difficult to explain because there are sort of exceptions. Talmud Chacham, Melech, Kohen Gadol. How do you explain the exceptions according to the Havamina, never mind Maskana, which is the view of Rabbeinu Yerucham, the Riaz, and others, that these things are Ma'akev. But for our purposes at the moment, what I'm trying to show is that it isn't just about Ema, and it isn't just about the relative roles, it's about an absolute definition of, what's the way to give Eidos? What's the way to be a Baldavar? What's the way to be a Dayan? So, Bishlomo, you might say, at least the Dayanus and the Eidos part, we understand that a little more, that there's a certain formalism, there's a certain representation of Klal Yisrael, and a substantive role that the Dayanim and the Edom are playing in this process. Right, the Edom are, as we've already explained, for other reasons, the Torah imputes to them the status of, fact sources. And that's a remarkable thing. Until proven otherwise, they're 100% factual. And the Dayanim, of course, get to make these decisions, and they have tremendous power, and they're, the representation of the Ribbono Shel Olam, as we've discussed, Elohim Elohim, Dayanim Smuchim. But the Bali Dinim are just the trigger, right? They're just what brings the case to us. But what I'm trying to show is maybe not. Maybe the Bali Dinim in court also play a very formal function. And therefore, whether they stand, whether they sit, the equation to Dayanim and Edim is something that's taken very seriously. Anyways, the Gemara says the following. That's the Chachamim. We don't paskin like the Chachamim, paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. Amrav Yehuda Shamati, Shem Ratzel Lahoshi Veshneim Moshivim. If you want both of them, if the Dayanim wants both Bali Dinim to be seated, then that's acceptable. This is Rabbi Yehuda. Ezu Asur, what is not acceptable? Shaloi he echad omed vechad yoshev echad medaber kol tzarko, the echad omer lor katzer, I think somebody asked me this last week, katzer dvarecha. What you can't do is discriminate. And the reason you can't is because it's, it intimidates one side or it gives the perception that, there is some inequality or lack of objectivity, that the court is weighted towards one side over the other, and that is not acceptable. Okay, so the Gemara basically has this idea. Tosas here makes an interesting comment. Tosas says, "Vahid Sanhedrin Perikoyin Gadol Dabel Hashem Ben Shetach Yanai Amold Al Raglecha." Right, Vayoidu Becha. So the Gemara has this case in Sanhedrin. We'll be discussing it more fully. This story about Shani Shimon Ben Shetach, being kind of a strict, constructionist. So Yanai HaMelech, was, you know, called to court because his eved, you know, was involved in a crime. So he, as the owner, was a responsible party. And they addressed Yanai, and they said to him, Amod al raglecha, stand like the baldavar, right? Ve'ida b'cha, you know, and be prepared for the testimony to be given, you know, on this matter by the Eidim. So the question is, why did Yanai? Then the Gemara goes on to say that Yanai was outraged, and this caused an incident, and from then on they said that Malchei Yisrael are not Dan v'danin osan, lo meid v'lo midin osan, and so on. So the question is, like, what do they need this whole headache for? Shim ben Shakach sounds very admirable, like he was a Yikov Adina Sahar kind of a person. I mean, he wasn't, you know, just because he's the king, so it doesn't mean anything, but it sounds like that stirring this whole hornet's nest, you know, was unnecessary, because the Gemara says here that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and Ratzu Bezin Lahosh, if they could, as long as, so they should have said, Yanai Melech, and your, and the other party, if you want, you can sit. Right? Why, it's only admirable if it's necessary. If otherwise, it seems like it's, you know, it's a squandering of political capital, I guess, given what happened. Okay. So, the Tosis comes up with an important comment here, and more important, even in Sanhedrin. So Tosis here says, Asi Delok Rabbi Yehuda. Either that Gemara is lo alibid Rabbi Yehuda, it's alibid the Chachamim. Chachamim seem to be stricter about the requirement of Balei Dinim from Mida. They don't say what Rabbi Yehuda says, and that is that if you're going to seat them both, and then there's greater flexibility. But then the Gemara then Tosas says something else. Ula didei b'shas gemar din have, b'lo b'shas kabbalas edeshu tchilas adin. Or even if it's, we'll see in a moment, that even the Chachamim, even Rabbi Yehuda rather, who is more flexible on the requirement of Amida, is more flexible generally, and certainly b'shas maso matan, when they're having the discussion, the legal discussion, legal back and forth. But when it comes to the Gemar Din, right, the Psak Halacha, there the Balei Dinim have to stand, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. So maybe the answer is that this was b'shas Gemar Din, not b'shas Kabbalah Seidus, even though it doesn't sound that way in the Gemara. It sounds like it's Shas Kabbalah Seidus, really. But maybe we must conclude that it was B'shas Gemar Din to explain why Shem ben Shetach was demanding that Yanai stand. Okay, that's what Tosas says here. Tosas in Sanhedrin says something else. There Tosas suggests that even though Rabbi Yehuda does not require Amida for the Shas Maso Matan, he does require Amida for the Kabbalah Seidus, just like he requires it for the Gemar Din. Okay, so that's an interesting argument. Is Kabbalah Seidus, when you interview the Eidim, when you first hear the testimony of the Eidim, is that treated differently than Gemar Din or not in the Din Torah? That's the question. Oh. So this may very well, not necessarily, but may be connected to an issue that we brought up a couple of weeks ago for a totally different reason when we talked about the Ramban and Rav Sanjagon in the Shaklavatari of this Gemara. If you recall, at one point the Gemara said, "Vayomdu shnei anashim bedin." Why does it say shnei? It must be that it's talking about Eidus, because if it was Balei Dinim, wouldn't there be more that would come if there happened to be more than two Balei Dinim? Right? So then we talked about this Ramban. So what is the Ramban? Or Psajagon in the Ramban. On the Pasuk, Al Pishnaim O Shlosha Edim. Right? What do you mean Al Pishnaim O Shlosha Edim? So the Ramban, Perish Al Torah in Shoftim, quotes Psajagon as saying, Al Pishnaim O Shlosha Edim means, if you have a Din Torah in Dine Nefashos, a capital case, so you need a Bezdin of 23. Right? That's the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, that Bei Samadal. That's one of the differences between Dine Mamadus and Dine Nefashos. You need a bigger Bezdin. There are other differences as well. The question is, when you interview, when you first hear the testimony and you interview the Edim, what kind of Bezdin do you need then? It's a Dine Nefashos trial. The Edim are coming to court. The all 23 have to be sitting there interviewing or hearing the Eidus? Does the Kabbalah Eidus require a Bezin Shel Chav Gimel, a Bezin Shel Nefashos? Or is it possible to have a delegation, if you will, of three dayanim hear the Kabbalah Seder and then report to the Bezin of 23. So Rav Sajigon's chiddush was reading that pasuk al pishnayim o shlosha edim. If you have shnayim edim who are heard by shlosha, meaning dayanim, right? Then that's good enough for din nefashos. And the Ramban disagrees because the Ramban says, I don't see why there should be a difference between the gemar din and the kabbalah seidus, right? Everything in din nefashos requires a bezin shel chaf kemo. That argument could be explained in various ways, but one way certainly to explain it is to what extent, right, is the Kabbalah's Eidos, a critical defining part of a Din Torah, or more like a Hechatimtzi, again, more like something that is like a necessary prerequisite, right? You have to hear the Eidim and you have to hear the Tainas, you know, but it's not like the Gemar Din, right, which is the real ruling of the Dayanim. So maybe the question is, to what extent is Kabbalah's Eidos parallel to Gemar Din, right, or more like Maso Matan, basically. So maybe that's the argument here as well, because Tosis and Sanhedrin is basically saying, even Rabbi Yehuda, who does not require a midas bale dinim in the whole case. And we'll see in a moment the Gemara says that you certainly don't require it for maso matan. You certainly do require it, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, in Gemar Din. Is Kabbalah Seidus like Gemar Din? Or is Kabbalah Seidus, right, like maso matan? So it could be that's the argument. There's another answer given in the Rishonim in Bale Tosis, and that is as follows. Maybe there's a difference between dine mamonos and dine nefashos. Because the case here, that the Gemara is speaking about mostly, are cases of dine mamonos. In Sanhedrin, this case of Shimba and Shetach and Yanei HaMelech was a case where the Eved of Yanei HaMelech was responsible for a death. So it's a dine nefashos trial. So Tosas suggests there that even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that Bale Dinim in a Dine Nefashos case have to stand not only in the Gemar Din, but also in either the Kabbalah Seidus or maybe even in the Maso Matan, etc. That's the other view that we find in Bale Tosas. So that too requires an explanation, namely why does it make a difference? If we're talking about whether Bali Dinim have to stand or not, why should it matter? The issue that we just discussed a minute ago was, what's the status in general of Kabbalah Seidus vis-a-vis Gemar Din? That's a question that goes across any Din Torah, basically. But now we're confronting a different question. Do the different shlavim, the different stages or phases in a Din Torah, right? Are they impacted by whether or not the Din Torah is a Din Imamonos or Din Nefashos case? On the surface, you would think not. But according to one view in Tosas, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that during the only time you require Bali Din Bamida is Gemar Din and Imamonos, requires the Bali Din to be standing. Right. Also, at Kabbalah Seidus, possibly Maso Matan in the Fashos. And the question is, why? So again, it goes back to the Sod that I've mentioned many times, and that is that there's perhaps a fundamental difference between Dini Mamonos and Dini Nefashos. This is the Rav's suggestion to explain many things. And that is that in Dini Mamonos, it's really only the Gemar Din, maybe also the Kabbalah Seidus, which really has the formal status of a Din Torah, of a specific Din Torah. And the rest of it, particularly the Maso Matan, once you have the facts in front of you, and the Dayanim discussing or debating the Halacha, that is more of an abstraction. It's like a Beis Medrash case. So you have the facts, you plug it in, you argue about it, then of course you reach a point where it becomes concrete, practical, right, where you're applying it, and that's where it becomes specific again. But it didn't nefashos, because of the stakes involved and also the nature of the deliberation, so it could explain many aspects of dinin nefashos. It's very possible that the entirety of the deliberation is about the dinin nefashos case. It's all about this particular nidon. So what we might explain is my suggestion that is that really the bali dinim have to stand. Anything that's related to the chalos of this particular din Torah, anything having to do with the formal din Torah, they have to stand, because they're the bali dinim, right? The din Torah is revolving around them, their fate, their status, and so on. Just an dinim amenus, that is limited to the gemar din, or maybe to the kabbalah sedus, each of which is very specific to them, their particular story, their particular fate, and so on. But indeed in nefashos, even the maso matan is not divorced from the particular baldavar. And therefore, the requirement to stand is something that applies throughout. So that might explain the other view in the Bali Tosis. Okay, let's continue. Guess I want to cover some ground today. So the Gemara says as follows. Tan Rabbanan, b'tzedek tishpat amisecha. Could I just do that? Shaloi hei echad yoshev echad omeid. One shouldn't stand, the other sit. Or the other way. Echad medaber kol tzarko. One's given the opportunity, you know, without any kind of limits, right, to express himself. The echad omer lo katzer dvarecha. And the other one, you say to him, you know, be short and succinct and to the point. Obviously, again, that is some sort of a perception of treating them unequally. And you're not allowed to do that. Davracher, betzedek tishpod amisecha, have a don es chavercha lekav skus. Another pshat is, have a don, betzedek tishpod amisecha means judge your friend, not in a din Torah, but when you hear things about him, betzedek, right? Weigh it, or put the weight on just. Have a don es chavercha lekav skus. So I said I would say something about this very quickly. So this is, of course, also the Mishnah in Masechet Avos, Aleph Vav, have a don es kol ha'adam lekaf schus. So the Rishonim in Avos, and some of the Rishonim here as well, expand upon, you know, what this really means. Because, you know, in theory, this too could be taken out of context and would apply to extremely, right, you know, may give the image of, or the perception, you know, of being very idealistic, but in the end of the day, like most extreme things, you know, ends up being a source for cynicism, or at least is counterproductive, you know, in terms of even, you know, the ideal that seems to be inspiring it. Now, if you apply in an uncritical way, have they done as kol adam lekaf schus, you can make a mockery of justice, and you know, you can turn your legal system into a chuchot tlula, into a mockery, and you know, the, as I say, very idealistic principle, which is to give people the benefit of the doubt, you know, which isn't just about you know, the specific context of din, or even assessing what you heard people did. It's more of an optimistic posture towards humanity, right? The idea that you know, that people, are more likely, you know, admirable and honest and just. Something, you know, which really undergirds the cheskes kashrus of edus as well, as we've discussed numerous times. So that optimistic, idealistic principle, right, when applied in an obviously exaggerated way, you know, becomes ridiculed, you know, becomes trivialized. So it's fascinating that the Rambam already, and Rabbeinu Yonah, following in his direction, and many of the Rishonim suggests that this principle has to be qualified. Essentially, the Rambam came up with the idea, really, of what we sometimes call Heve Donis Kol Adam Zakai Lekaf Schus. The Rambam felt that you have to basically assess the situation, you know, in numerous ways. Number one, there's the objective assessment, you know, of what it is that you're dealing with, that you're trying to pin down. You heard something about someone, you saw something that someone did. It can be, you know, interpreted equally, let's say, in a positive or in a negative way. That's usually a no-brainer. You know, we say about that, typically, we'll get qualify that in a minute too. Have they done us kol ha'adam lekapschus? What happens in a situation where the, let's say, objective circumstances aren't equal, right? They're not vague. They don't, you know, easily lend themselves to two equal interpretations. Let's say, you know, it's clearly weighted, you know, in a negative way. It seems that, you know, the evidence is very damaging, right? It would require some sort of justification, right? The projection of circumstances, right? That would, you know, that would rationalize, you know, this person's behavior. That also come into the rubric of Heve Donis Kol Ha'adam Lekaf Schus. So that's what the Rishonim suggests, that you have to look at the track record and the personality, right, of the person involved. I'll just read you just very quickly from the Rambam, who says the following: In Yano Kashia Adam Shelo Teidabo Im Tzadik Im Rasha. If you don't know who a person is, one way or another, he has no track record. The Tireu Shiyasen Mase O Yomer Davar Shim Tefarshehu Al Derech Achat Yatov Im Tefarshehu Al Derech Acheres Yera. Right? If you have no, you don't know who this person is, one way or another, he has no track record. The circumstances are ambiguous, right? They're obscure. They can be taken either way. So kachoso al hatov velo takshav bora. So one aspect of Heve Donis Kol Adam Lekaf Schus is, all things being equal, give the benefit of the doubt, right? The presumption should be, right, an idealistic one. Aval im yeh adam noda shehu tzadik mefursam ubepeulot hatovot. But if you had somebody who has a impeccable, you know, record or reputation, the nirlo poel seichel inyanav marim shu poel ra, but the circumstantial evidence, right, is against him in this particular case. The enadim yochal hachriya letov ele bedocha gadol, and the only way that you can justify or rationalize his behavior is by projecting, right, all sorts of extenuating circumstances. That's bedochak. The efsha rochoku, and it is a distant, unlikely scenario, in other words, for him to be guiltless. Roy shetikachoso shehu tov. Achar sheyesh shum tzad efsharut lios tov. As long as it's possible, right? Minimally maybe, I don't know what this means, possible or you know, minimally plausible. Hard to draw the line exactly. The ein mutar lo lechashto, v'al ze amru kol achoshe b'ksherim lo kebegufam. The chain, but the Ram says it goes in the other direction as well. Kishiyeh Rasha, the yitzparsimah maasav, the achakach roinu shiyasa maisa, shakol rayosav moro shehutov, the eshbo tzad efsharut rachok lera. If you have somebody whose reputation is you know, extremely negative, and he does something ambiguous, right, you can either interpret it either way. Ra'ui lihishamer mimenu v'shelo tamin bo shehutov achar sheyesh bo efsharut l'ra. V'al zeh nemar ki chanen kolo al teman bo u'kishiyeh bilti yadua v'hamasa bilti machria le'echad mishnei ha'ktzavot tzorech b'derech ha'chasidus shetadin l'kav zchus eze katze sheyeh mishnei ha'ktzavot. So this is the Rambam, and Rabbeinu Yonah elaborates this even more fully, but basically the same idea. Basically, in other words, you have to take into account the track record of the individual, Letova or lera'a. And the truth is, I mentioned in the past, that this is just good. It's not whitewashing. In other words, you could have, if you took an uncritical posture or stance on having done this kol adam lekaf zchus, and you were to whitewash every, seemingly, problematic thing that people do, obviously that would undercut, that would undermine, the vigilance and the sense of justice, that is necessary to uphold, an idealistic system. So what really the Chazal are telling us is that, number one, we should have an optimistic, idealistic perspective, when all things being equal, that's number one, and even bedochak a little bit. And number two, that we should have enough wisdom, right, to assess things against a bigger backdrop, not just, according to the narrow evidence of a particular case. And this is true for, this is what I was referring to before, the very concept of pshat, in a bigger sense. Pshat is not just the narrow translation or interpretation, whether it's pshat of psukim or mamare chazal, or the pshat in, have a donis kol adam lekaf zchus, like assessing people's actions. You sometimes have to look at it against a bigger, broader canvas, person's personal history, and so on. So sometimes you see people who, to have certain qualities, behave in a certain way. And we'll just call it good pshat, basically, in that situation, is to assume extenuating circumstances, because the history, personal history, in a way, does not support a more negative assessment. And the same is true in the opposite direction as well. So I'd like to just add, just one more second before I take your question, that also may explain, the usage here, which is very unusual, had they done as kol ha'adam lekaf zchus, which some of them farshim speak about in Avos. Not kol adam, but kol ha'adam. And the idea is, we have this also, of course, another critical linchpin application, that is at the end of Sefer Koheles, right? Sof davar kol nishma, et olakim yirat mitzvotav, et mitzvotav shemor, kizek kol ha'adam. And I think in both cases, the interpretation is that, if you look narrowly at something, you see it in one way. And, people can, sometimes have the illusion that they're just, being honest and, seeing it or telling it, as it is. In the story of Koheles, seeing things narrowly leads you to, eis lirkod ve'eis livkos. And, ultimately to a conclusion of hevel havalim hakol havel. If you look at any particular philosophy of life, and you take it alone as being self-sufficient, in the end it's going to disappoint you. It's going to be found, inadequate. It's only sof davar hakol nishma, right? You take everything that was said in Sefer Koheles, and you put it together with the filter of sof davar hakol nishma, the filter being Elokim Yirat mitzvotav shemar, then you have a philosophy of life that is meaningful, and that provides or fosters a life of purpose. Kizeh kol ha'adam. That's what it means, because that is the totality of man. It's not one aspect of his persona. It's not zeroing in on a moment, on an action, right? On an utterance. It's kol ha'adam. And the same is true. Have a donis kol ha'adam lekafskos. When you assess a person, you have to assess him against the totality of who he is and what he has done, both when you assess him broadly and also when you look at his narrow actions, and you ought to really understand them. People with a certain track record, a certain history, they're already a proven commodity in certain areas, So you sometimes know that the extenuating circumstances are more likely than not. You're not whitewashing, you're just applying a more accurate yardstick, you know, given a better understanding of who the people are. There was a question. Who was it? Yeah.
It just seems to me, I mean, when a Zen Mishpat is rendered, by definition, you can't, you have to let go of the idea.
No, this isn't a Mishpat. This statement is about, you know, being choshed b'ksheirim. Not about justice at all. It's not about din. And din are about fact. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Have done es chavercha lekaf zchus?" Says, "V'lo b'din balei dinam akosav medaber." This statement, according to this view, is not talking about balei dinam sitting in a courtroom. Ela b'roa chavera o sadavar shata yachal lahachrio litzad avera ulitzad zchus. Somebody does something. And you, you know, in theory, there are two explanations that, you know, that fit. Right? You should be taking an optimistic, you should be giving him the benefit of the doubt. Hachriu l'schus. Ve'al techashdeyu baver. I'm only adding that the Rambam and Rabbeinu Yonah and many others are suggesting it isn't only about, you know, it isn't uncritical and, you know, without limits, number one. And number two, that there's a combination of assessing, you know, the event, right, against its actual, you know, what it is that occurred and how likely, you know, this or that explanation, you know, is to satisfy, in combination also with understanding the people in a broader sense, because that sometimes is even more crucial in a justifying, not whitewashing, but a deeper and better, more likely, accurate understanding, you know, of what it is. You have a person who's, you have Avram Avinu, and he's an Ish Chesed. It's not like Avram Avinu needs my endorsement, right? I mean, he did plenty of things that established who he was. You know, somebody who, you know, drops seemingly, or applies, the Kabbal Pnei Ashchina, you know, to run after Orchim, right? And, you know, then he turns his back on his nephew Lot, and he says to him, listen, you know, this land isn't big enough for both of us. Now, of course, if you know the back story and what he did for Lot and everything about it, makes more sense. So let's say he didn't. All you knew is that Avraham Avinu is the epitome of chesed. He's a man who prays for a stone. He argues with the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? He goes out and he saves Lot later, v'hu yoshev b'sdom. But how come he's turning his back on him? Like, so if you just look at the fact that obviously there, you know, he's motivated by financial reasons, other reasons, or Yishmael, right? Avraham Avinu at one point says Vayera, but he turns his back on Yishmael. So if you don't know that Avraham Avinu, you know, is the advocate for every, you know, tzaruah v'zav, every, you know, evil, you know, person, he's extending, then it sounds pretty akzari that he's, you know, turning his back on one of his children. You know, once you do know that, then you know that it's an unbelievable ate date kirei lo kimata, or Avraham Avinu is willing to sacrifice, you know, it's not the ultimate one, right? What you know, what greater akzariot is that? But this is Avraham Avinu. So all it is that he was machmir in Yiras Elokim, right? Despite the fact that more than probably any other human being ever, right, this man of empathy, you know, had to bring himself, you know, to destroying his personality. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, right, Heshivas Chavasi al b'nei Yisrael b'kanos kinasi b'socham, and he gets a bris shalom. So Chazal tell us that he was like the most gentle, you know, person. There wasn't like an ounce of kanaut, you know, in Pinchas, and therefore he's the only one who could be that kind of a kanai. So again, if you just isolate the event, look at this, this is what happened. This thing happened. Everybody's paralyzed. This guy Pinchas, you know, grabs his spear, you know, rides into action. It sounds like, you know, it sounds terrible. But he gets the bris shalom, right? He continues, he gets kuhunas olam. Normally a kohen shaharek asanefesh is, you know, is excluded, right? So, what's going on here? The answer is, right, there are two ways to look at things. If you look at things narrowly, you know, without history, without personal history, without the history of what's going on or the stakes of what's happening, then you know, your likely pshat, if you will, is you know, is going to be very unequivocal, frankly. But the truth is, these are great examples of knowing who the people are, knowing what the background is, knowing the back history of parallel, you know, phenomena or circumstances, makes it perfectly clear that what looks like what was happening is not what it was happening. Something totally different was happening.
You could include Tamar in that.
Yeah, you could include a lot of, you know, biblical and contemporary and people that we know sometimes do things that, you know, if it weren't them, we would, l'kula l'chumra, you know, as I say, the Rambam says it goes in both directions. You know, if a Russia does something seemingly very benevolent, right, is, you know, has he had a change of heart, or, you know, is there something, you know, nefarious, you know, is he trying to, you know, camouflage, you know, some bigger and more dastardly, you know, plan. That's not kosher b'ksherin, right? Not considering that possibility would be irresponsible. So what we're being told in Hevedanus Kol Adam Kapskos really is two things. Number one, the inspiring, optimistic perspective on human behavior is halachically appropriate, all things being equal. But what we're also being told, the kula and the chumra, is don't be superficial, don't be narrow in your assessments, right? Take the bigger background, personal and event background into consideration when you assess things.
What's Rashi's point of a law
b'dinu? No, Rashi's saying this has nothing to do with the Din Torah. Din Torah has its own rules. This is, somebody does something and you want to know, should you be condemning him? Should you be thinking that he's a Rasha? How should you respond and react to him? We're not talking about Dayanim, we're not talking about Edim, we're not talking about Baledinim. In a court of law, there are rules, right? And there's evidence, and there are laws. This has nothing to do with that. This has to do with my neighbor. I saw my the most honest, you know, neighbor that I've ever known, you know, and I saw him in the middle of the night, you know, sneaking into the other neighbor's, you know, basement, you know. So should I assume that he's, you know, really dishonest? Or, you know, or did something, there's some extenuating circumstances that explains, you know, what he, am I whitewashing him to say that? Or is that just, that's probably the most likely, again, I'm fond of quoting this line in Sherlock Holmes because that's really what he's saying. You know, when you eliminate, you know, the impossible, all that remains, no matter how improbable, is the truth. So I just think it's a good line. It's, you know, have you done his kalanda makaf's chus? Meaning it means that pshat, or, you know, a reasonable explanation, right, is not a narrow concept. It's also a function of all the other options. So if something sounds improbable, right, but it's all that remains because the other things are even more improbable or impossible, then that becomes probable. An improbable probable, you know? Yeah.
So it seems that the Mishnah in Avos is much more universal than the quote here. The saying, Habidanach Kol Ha'adam,
yeah,
is over here.
Yeah. Could be, yeah, if you look at the Gemara and Shabbos, or different Girsos. I don't want to get into that now, but that is an interesting question. And there are different Perushim, and there's an argument about where to draw the line in all these things. And whether really, does it really go in both directions, or is it more in the, you know, Habidanach Kol Ha'adam Zakai L'Kav Schuz, but not necessarily, maybe we should be a little, you know, again, it's interesting, the Rambam is so hard on the Rasha. But I think, again, because Rambam didn't want this to be, or was convinced that this isn't a chucho tlula. You know, it's not some pie in the sky. Because that's all very charming, but it can also be very dangerous. Right. Yeah.
The Chinuch actually quotes this memra in the midst of Minu Dayanam. When he talks about that, Minu Dayanam is not just setting up judges, but everyone, so to speak, is a judge. Because of this memra of Chazal.
So what does he say again? That everybody...
In the midst of Minu Dayanim, he quotes this, having done a column of Chazal, that everyone has an opportunity, so to speak, to be a judge.
On a different level. I mean, that's Kedarko, the Chinuch. Right. I'm saying, I don't think he disagrees...
Yeah,
With Rashi.
Right.
Right. I just think what he's saying is, you know, because again, we'll see in a moment, Dayanim also, let me say also, we'll see in a moment, even in this Gemara we have it, the Din of Din Maruma. I mean, the Dayan deals with the facts in front of him. But the Dayan also, the Rambam says this, it's based on our Gemara here and several Gemaras in Sanhedrin, is the Dayan also has a responsibility to use his instinct sometimes if he thinks that somebody's manipulating the system. Right, and there's something wrong. Din Maruma, that's what Din Maruma is. Din Maruma is not scientific. It's instinct. It's an exception to, you know, just Din being detached, objective, going with the sources. Because you need sometimes you can tell people are manipulating the system. And you need to be able to smell that a little bit, you know, to intuit it. Yeah, okay. So let's continue. You can see there are a lot of interesting things here. The Gemara then goes on to say, Tanya Rav Yosef said, "Betzedek tishmor na misecha. Im she'itcha b'toru mitzvos hishtadel aduna yafeh." So again, some people say this is a continuation of having done this kavercha lekav zchus, meaning im she'itcha b'toru mitzvos hishtadel aduna yafeh. You know, give him a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt because, you know, he's a person who has certain values, whose behavior has a certain consistency. Or does it mean more than that? Is it referring to giving precedence to people whose behavior, right, warrants it? And what precedence in what area? So the Gemara says, Rav Ula Berei de Rav Ilai, Havla Dina Kama de Rav Nachman, right, Rav Ula had a din Torah in the presence of Rav Nachman. Shalach le Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef sent to Rav Nachman. He said, "Ula Kevreinu, our good friend Ula." It was like him a letter of introduction, you know. Our good friend Ula, Amit, right, is a buddy. He's a friend. He's a chaver b'Torah b'mitzvos. So the Gemara says, "Amar." They said, "Lemai shalachli." He so Rav. Nachman said, "Why are you telling me this? Because you want me to flatter him, you know, Chalila, right?" Hadar Amar Lemishrei B'Tigrei. So, what is Lemishrei B'Tigrei? This is a huge debate. What exactly Lemishrei B'Tigrei is, and there are all sorts of interesting sheets. I'll just stick with the Rashi and Tosfos for the moment. Rashi is Lemishrei B'Tigrei in Ba Din Acher Lefanai Efso Kedzeh Tchila. And if they're on the docket, the court docket, you know, if he's somebody, who has special schuyos, so we'll take his case first. Tosa says, Kishibo shnei dinim divasachas. That's if both cases came at one time, and you have to break a deadlock. Din ba din echad tchila, tzarech lahagdimo, k'namirim b'sanhedrin, kakaton kagadol tishma'un. That refers not only to the amount of the case, meaning a pruta or $1 billion, but it refers even to the people who are being nidon. So that the only time you say lemishrei b'tigrei is if you have two people came, two dintores that came to Vasachas. The other day in Tosis disagrees, inami, asei, the kovenat Torah odif, kiraminim perik basar iksuvis, that really, no, you will actually put Talmud Chacham's case earlier on the docket. There is some issue here, either of kind of Kavanat Torah concerns, or also the idea, and this we find Pidyon Shvuyim and other things, certain dinim of Kvod Talmud Chacham are dinim in the Tzorech HaTzibur. Right? And that's what we find, that, you know, even the normal rules that apply to Pidyon Shvuyim, if somebody is held captive, so there are limits in how you can ransom them, because you don't want to, as a deterrent, in other words, you don't want to inspire people to, you know, to take hostages. So some of the Rishonim say, however, Talmud Chacham, you know, doesn't have to follow the regular rules. Why doesn't have any greater Kedushas Yisrael than anybody else? The answer is, some of them explain, because he is a basically a community asset, right? And therefore, you know, we treat his fate differently. In other words, the community needs its Talmid HaKhamim in terms of the quality of life of the community. So this may be something like that. The Ritva goes even further in terms of even interrupting cases, not just this. Second day of Tosis is a situation where you have an order, let's say a Dinei Torah, and you skip the Talmud Chacham to the head of the list. But what if you already started, you know, with a Din Torah? Would you even interrupt that Din Torah for the Talmud Chacham? So the Ritva discusses that possibility, connects it to the issue of Osek v'mitzvah pater min mitzvah. Very interesting issues, but for another time. So this is all part of a whole topic, the prerogatives of Talmud Chachamim as individuals, as an expression of Kavanat Torah, and let's say as a community asset. Okay. Then the Gemara goes on. The Gemara says, Inami l'shuna d'daini. I'm not going to discuss that now, but that's a whole issue. Shuna d'daini is, everybody will remember this from, you know, Bava Basra days, and Bava Metzia days, and Ksuvas days. Shuna d'daini means, well, the Machlok is what shuna d'daini means, typically, Rashi explains that you try to, in a situation, certain situations where there's no objective halachic way to make a determination, like have shnei shtaros hayotzim b'yamecha. You sold the same field to two different people at the same time. Like you wrote each one a shtar that says, I hereby, bequeath to you or gift to you this field, you know, on Tuesday. Okay, so then it should be chal, the last second of Tuesday, because in kosvin shows, they say. So, but you wrote it to two different people. You didn't tell the two people that you wrote it, you know, each one. You don't tell each one that you wrote to the other. Right? You make it seem like, you know, who else am I going to give my prize, you know, field, you know, and so on to, if not you, and exclusively you. But you did it to two people, right? So that's called shtei shtaros hayotzos b'yamechad. And there's a debate whether we say Rav and Shmuel would say Yachloku, which makes a lot of sense, or Shuda Dedaini. So Shuda Dedaini, this is a debate. Usually Rashi says, you try to figure out, there's nothing you can do, you can't figure it out objectively. So what you try to do is figure out who he's likely intended it for. Like if he has, again, you can't know, but this is the best solution. Now as you look at the history, who is he likely to have wanted really to have this? Let's say he has a much warmer, you know, longer, you know, friendship with A than with B, as a history of giving, gifts to A, and so on and so forth. So then, like, you'll project that this is what he really meant, you know, and that the other one, he was trying to, I don't know, be mephias him in some way, or probably wasn't such a good thing to do, but that's how Rashi interprets. And Rabbeinu Tam thinks that it's much more arbitrary. That we just decide, the Dayanim just decide whatever they think, whatever they want. Some people take the Rabbeinu Tam as the Dayanim can give it to whoever they want. I personally don't think that's what Rabbeinu Tam meant. I think that these two views about trying as much as possible to project what was the intent of the of the Makna. Just that one requires that, or has to be rooted in more objective considerations. This is my personal view. I could be wrong. Now, there's the view that says what Rashi usually says, which is that you try to figure it out based on past relationships and patterns and so on. I think that requires that it not just be instinctive, but that it be, you'd be able to, the Dayanim be able to say, this is why we think that he probably intended to give it to A and not to B. Right? Because, you know, he knows them longer, you know, they're neighbors, he's given them gifts before, and so on and so forth. Whereas Rabbeinu Tam is more, Rabbeinu Tam says, the Dayanim can give it to whoever they want. Right? So again, a lot of people take Rabbeinu Tam kipshuto, that, you know, the Dayanim get to choose. I think the Rabbeinu Tam may mean something else, and that is, even if I can't document in any way or objectively, formulate, you know, my instinct and impression, this is what I really think, based on trying to get into his head. I think it's more subjective and less objective, even though both of them are short of proof. If you had real proof, there wouldn't be an issue. Anyways, that's what Tosis here points out about Rabbeinu Tam. Inami l'shuda, l'pirish Rabbeinu Tam, l'mfarish, d'shuda l'mitshi yirtza dayin litain. This Gemara is a little tough, because what's the Gemara really saying? So, yitain, tzarech lomar, d'hochir hea baldin shekenegot tamen chacham, Vayare shema yiten lo kedama talmud chacham kodem gabe nixi letuvia. Lekach sholach legamze talmud chacham yase shuda lemisha yirtza. Okay. Either way. Then the Gemara goes on to say, Amar Ula, getting back to the Amida of Balei Dinim and so on. Gemara says, Amar Ula machlokas be Balei Dinim. Aval Edim devre akol be Amida. Even though Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham argue whether or not there's a requirement of Amida be Balei Dinim throughout, Edim certainly require Amida. The Chsiva Yamdu, rather, the Amdu, Shnei Hanashim, etc. Amar Avuna machlokas b'shas maso maton. The argument is in maso maton. Aval, regarding Balei Dinim, aval b'shas gemar din, this is what we were talking about before, divrei hakol dayanim b'yeshiva u Balei Dinim b'amida. Dechsiv v'yeshev Moshe l'shpot es ha'am v'yamod ha'am. Lishnachrin, another lashon, machlokas b'shas maso maton, aval b'shas gemar din, divrei hakol dayanim b'yeshiva Balei Dinim b'amida. Why? The ha'edim are kigmar din dami. So this would work very nicely with what I said before, which is that the idea of Gemar Din, or maybe Kabbalas Eidos, or maybe Nefashos, an expansion to other things, is it's not per se these phases or stages. It's that these phases or stages are where the Din Torah becomes personal. In other words, it becomes about these people, as opposed to being a hechetimtzi for Shakal Vitaria about, or maso maton about, you know, Jewish law, where, oh, like, you know, give me some interesting circumstances, you know, and we'll debate the point. So, you know, what is that? Is that Gemar Din? Is that also Kabbalah Seidus? In the Fashos, maybe it's everything, etc. Then the Gemara tells a story. This is, we talked about last week. The Gemara says that the wife of Rav Huna had a din Torah in the presence of Rav Nachman. And Amar, Rav Nachman was in a quandary. He said, Hechi Navid, what should I do? I ekim mekama v'statman tanasi debaldina. So if I stand in her presence, then it'll intimidate the other baldin, as he'll think that I'm biased towards her. Lo ekum mikama, if I just sit as I normally would, a dayan supposed to sit, is I can't do that because Eishes Chaver Rei Kechaver, right? She's the wife of a Talmud Chacham. So Amar L'Shamei told his attendant, say the Efrach alai bar Avza, the Shadi ilvoi the ekum. He told him to, like, you know, let this goose loose in the Bezdin, so that everybody would be, you know, fluttering along with the goose, I guess, and everybody would stand up. Okay. So, this is very interesting, of course. If you notice, Rashi says here, Dibisud Rav Huna, Mishameis Rav Huna. That is applied after Rav Huna died, implying that the halacha would have been different if Rav Huna had been alive. The Rishonim picked up on that. If you look at Tosas says, Why didn't he have her sit? Right? I mean, a simple solution. Why did he have to get up with the goose? The whole business, I mean, it's a great story. But, why did he have to do it? Why did he just have her sit and offer the other baldin to sit as well? Right? So, Avagavda Yochel Hoshiva, Kedamar B'samuch, Asei the Kavod Torah Adif, V'achanami Asei the Kavod Torah Shehoisei Sheshchaver. So, Ikelameimar Shalarotzel Hoshiva Shalalistom Tanis Baldina Afilu B'shaz Gemar Din Afa B'shegamar Hatainos Oshema in Beishes Chavel Achar Misa Asei the Kvarat Torah Adif. So this is an interesting tosis. There are some Rishonim who say the whole din of Eishes Chaver is a din drabanan. That's a day in the Ramban. That's not what Tosis says here. Tosis obviously was picking up on the Rashi and suggesting that the din of Eishes Chaver La'achar Misa doesn't say it's drabanan. Some say it's drabanan. Tosis doesn't have the same effect. So this, of course, is the interesting issue. There's a big literature on this, but we're not going to go into it. And that is, does the din veishes chaver k'chaver, right, is that something that applies directly or indirectly? Right? In other words, the idea that, is the is a way of giving kavod to Rav Huna, right? Or his wife deserved kavod in her own right, as eishes chaver k'chaver. Right? So just to give you a parallel, but there are good reasons to be mechalek. So there's a huge debate here, whether the din of eishes chaver k'chaver is rabbanan or d'oraisa, whether it's rabbanan l'acharmisa or on a lower level l'acharmisa, if there are two levels. And obviously this is very relevant to this whole question. I'll just give you a quick mashal. There's a very famous discussion between the Rambam and the Ramban in Sefer Mitzvos regarding the Gemara in the end of Masechet Ksuvos about Kibud Avein. Gemara says in the end of Ksuvos that Kabeit Esa Vicha V'Esi Mecha, you know, the Es is L'Rabos Chicha HaGadol, and then it's also L'Rabos Eshes Avicha or Baal Imecha, right, a stepfather or a stepmother, and so on, that they're included also in the obligation of Kibbutah. So the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvos discusses the question why it is, or whether Achagadol or Eshes Avicha or Baal Imecha should be included in Minyan Mitzvos or not. Right? So the Ramban in Sefer Mitzvah says, I don't understand the whole thing. Says, I don't understand why the Ramban was bothered by any of this. Because the Gemara says in Ksuvos very clearly that Baal Ha'aim or Eshes Ha'av apply only while the relative is alive. That's only while if the father's alive, so then there's a din of kibud also for the stepmother. And if the mother is alive, then there's a din of kavod also for the stepfather. But l'achar misa, they're not. So the Ramban says, that's why they're not counted in minyan mitzvahs. Right? Which is his way of saying that basically, it's not that there's a direct obligation, right, to be mechabed, a stepfather or stepmother, it's a way of expressing proper kavod for a parent that you're also extending that to their spouse, right? You know, you're essentially endorsing, you know, their choice or respecting their choice, and it's a way of being mechabed your blood relative, right, in that particular way. And that's why lachar misa, it doesn't apply anymore. And that's why it's not separate in minyan mitzvos, because it's just, you know, it's an extension of the ikar adin. The Ramban seems to be saying or says that, you know, the same thing would be true for achagadol, right? That the achagadol din of kavod is limited to b'chayei ha'av, which is not so obvious at all. So the Nosa Kalim, the different ones, say, oh, maybe the Rambam disagrees. Now, the Rambam can't disagree about, well, he could disagree about Achicha HaGadol, L'achar Misa. He certainly disagree about that. Probably does disagree about that. But he can't disagree about the fact that Eshes, you know, Avicha, or Baal Imecha, right, is limited to L'achar Misa. That's explicit in the Gemara in Ksuvos. But it still could be that you could explain it in a different way. In other words, as long as there is that relationship, as long as there's a shame, Baal Imecha, or Eshes Avicha, which, the other assumption, only applies when, right, the blood relative is alive, this person is your stepfather or your stepmother, right, when your father or your mother is alive. And once that status exists, then there's a direct, probably not as intense, but a direct obligation of being mechabed them because of the role that they play in your life. But lachar misa, that shame is paka. Of course, the shame ach hagadol is not something which is paka. So unless you think that the chiyuv kavod is agav the father, it wouldn't be affected by lachar misa. So I'm just pointing out, this is about kavod, kibud avim, right? And its relationships of stepfathers and stepmothers and older brothers and so on. This is Eishes Chaver, and it's, you know, the different kind of kavod, right? The kavod of Hilchos Talmud Torah. You can certainly be mechalik between them. There seems to be evidence in different directions. The Gemara says in one place that, you know, that Eishes Chaver is treated like a chaver for Trumos and Maestros. That's even La'achar Misas a chaver. But that's because that has nothing to do with status. That has to do with, you know, a certain lifestyle, knowledge, integrity. Right? You know, person who is noeg, you know, to be Zayir and Trumas and Maestros and so on. There's other evidence in the other direction. But it's a very interesting question. Whenever you have these agav, you know, kind of relationships, are they direct relationships, you know, except that they're more vulnerable, you know, to because they're hyphenated relationships, so they don't always exist, you know, to the same extent, but when they do, they're direct. Or these are what we call agav or tafel relationships to begin with. There's a question? Yeah.
You have Rabbi Akiva, right? His wife with Shelly Vishalah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Needs to be understood in that light, too. So this is a whole issue and a whole literature about all of this. Okay, let's continue. Ha'amar Bar, the Gemara says, Machlokas b'shas masu matan b'shas kumar nivra kol dayona b'yeshiva baleidina b'amida. The Gemara says, the Yosef k'man d'shari misane. So what he was doing is he, you know, he bent down like he was tying his shoelaces. It's a good story all around, right? So, again, this also triggers a whole discussion in the poskim about the status of things that are neither classical sitting or classical standing, right? Bending, right? Shchiya, which appears in different sugyas, and also smicha, but not the rabbinic type, the leaning type. Like if you lean on something, and you know if you took away the you know, the object, you would fall. Is that considered a mida or yeshiva? So again, I don't want to go into that right now because it's a massive, massive topic around these gemaras. It's a huge topic. There's a tshuva of the Rivash, and it was understood a certain way in the Bach and the Taz Bach and the Taz and the Shach and the Gra. It's a very, what can I say? A very lively and interesting discussion about distinguishing between the requirements of Amida and Yeshiva in different places. Let me just say it this way. Sometimes you require, to explain some of the different Kriyas HaTorah, right, Amida and Yeshiva, of Dayanim and Edim and Balei Dinim. What about in Kodshim? What about in Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim in Kodshim? There's evidence from all over that seems to be conflicting. To sort some of it out, sometimes it's important that you have mutually exclusive categories, right? Only Amida or only Yeshiva. Sometimes it's important just to have Amida or Yeshiva, even if it's not mutual. Let's say I can have Amida v'Yeshiva b'Vasachas. Or sometimes what you really require is that you shouldn't be Omed or that you shouldn't be Yoshev. Right? Those are three different things. So in trying to figure out shchia, like bending over, or smicha, leaning, whether it's Amida or Yeshiva, right, it's a little bit complicated for that reason. There are those who think that it's either Amida or Yeshiva. There are those who think that it's really both, Amida v'Yeshiva b'Vasachas. There are those who think that it's something in between and it's neither. Right? So I'm going to leave it at that, but the poskim really here in Choshe Mishpat, in these contexts, of Hilchos Dayanim and Hilchos Edim have really thresh out this whole matter of what constitutes Amida and Yeshiva in different areas of halacha. Okay. It's also interesting that the Gemara here tells us that Bishas Gemara didn't ver hakal dayana b'yeshiva, baladinim amida, and the Gemara says, Yosef command the shari misane, and then the Gemara says, va'amar ish ploni atazakai, ish ploni atachayev. That you pronounce the Gemara din of ish ploni atazakai, the ish ploni atachayev. What's interesting about that is that we find, we talked about this a couple of years ago with our Sanhedrin, that in different places in Shas, we find different definitions of Gemar Din. Three, actually. And then there's a big debate whether it's really three or two or one. And if it is at least two, and especially three, like why the discrepancy? We find Ish Ploni Atazaka, Ish Ploni Atachayim, the Dayanim make a pronouncement who's guilty and who's innocent. Sometimes we find Chayev Atalitein, right? A statement, you're obligated, right, to give, to pay. And third time is sort of Tsei Teinlo. We'll call that implementing, right? Go and actually carry out the din. So just without going into details at the moment, just take the two extreme for a moment. Ish Ploni Atachayev, Ish Ploni Atazakai, and Tsei Teinlo. If you look all over Shas in different contexts, you know, one approach would be to say that there really are two notions of Gemar Din, and again, paralleling what we talked about before, and that is, there's an abstract part, I don't mean in this case a Beis Medrash, even when it comes to the individual who's on trial, right, there are still, let's say, two very distinct aspects of Din. One is the bigger question, whether he's guilty or innocent. Like, you know, who's right in this case? Ploni atachayev, ploni atazakai. And then there's actually the bitsua hadin, the execution of justice. So, for example, the Gemara says in Meruba, Gemara talks about there's a din in if you steal something, if you do gneva, an act of gneva, you're chayev karen and kefel. If you steal into somebody's home and you take his object, that's called gneva, not gazela, and you have to also pay kefel. However, the Gemara says that there can be a situation where chazra karen lebailim, that you kind of get the, if you're chazra karen lebailim, if you get the karen back to the bailim, then you're not chayiv kefel. Without going into detail, some dinim that are result of Gemar Din are a result of Tse Teinlo because they have to do with the actual disposition of the money. But anything having to do with the question of guilt or innocence of the Gavra, of the Nidonim, of the Balidinim, whether or not they are guilty or innocent, right, makes much more sense to say Ploni Atachayev, Ploni Atazakai. So, for example, a couple of years ago, we were talking about this in context of Pshara, or Zeb Boror Lechad, Zeb Boror Lo Echad, like if there are alternative ways to have a Din Torah. There's the typical Din Torah that revolves around the Dinim, right? The objective norms and laws, right? The whole system of Chosha Mishpat, right? And then sometimes there's something called Pshara, right, where you can agree, to have a more flexible solution, that the Dayanim should come up with a proper, peaceful resolution. We discussed the different perspectives on that. But you're not allowed to switch from one to the other after Gemar Din. The Gemar Din, for that halacha, seems to be Ploni Atazakai, Ploni Atachayev, not say Teinlo or Chayev Atali Teinlo. And the same thing is true about Zavlo, what we call Zeb Boror Lo Echad. Typically, Bezdin, is constructed of three Dayanim, that are appointed in a sitting court. And in if you want, you have the option of creating a Zavlo, Zeb Boror Lo Echad, Zeb Boror Lo Echad, the first sugya and third parak of Sanhedrin. But again, you have to make that decision at a certain point in the Din Torah. So all that has to do with before you're found guilty or innocent, right, which changes the fate of the, but that's the abstract psak. But there are other dinim, I say like Chazor Keren Labailim and other things that depend on the actual money itself. Let's say it's a pikad. Does something turn into a pikadon? The gazlan is holding on to, or the ganav is holding on to the object, and it's established that it's not his, that he's a thief, that it's not his anymore. So it's only when you say teino that he turns into like a shomer on behalf of the nignav. Because at that point, you know, it's not just that he has to pay back, it's that this object has to be given back, and therefore holding on to it anymore is like holding on to a pikado. Okay? So it's very appropriate that the Gemara here is talking about Amida and Yeshiva. That isn't about, you know, digging into your pocket and actually paying the bills, right, or returning the object. That's about, you know, the formal pronouncement of Din. Okay. Let's continue just for another, give me another 2 minutes, and then we'll stop. I just want to get to within striking distance of where we need to go. As you can see, all these are very interesting questions in their own right. The Gemara says as follows. Some of them we've done already, so I'll be able to skip a little bit. The Gemara says, Hayt Surbim Rabbanim Ve'Am Ha'aretz Di'islu Dina Bahadei Adadi. You have a Talmud Chacham and an Am Ha'aretz. They have a Din Torah. Mosvinale Letzurba Rabbanan. You can offer the Tzurba Rabbanan to sit. Ulam Ha'aretz Nam Yamin Leitiv. You can tell the Am Ha'aretz that he also can sit. What happens if he doesn't want to sit? So Ikoi Leislumba, if it's his choice. Because he's not, you don't have to hold the Talmud Chacham hostage to the Am Ha'aretz's reticence, right? Ikoi Leislumba, as long as you give him the choice. Rab Bar Shrabia, Habale Dina Kamadura Papa, Osve Osiv Nami Lebaldine, he sat them both down. And then Osa Shlicha de Beidina Batash Bey, so Shlich peasant came and he, you know, he got very intemperate. V'ukmi la'amaretz, and he insisted the amaretz stand up. V'lamer le'Rav Papa Tiv, Rav Papa sat the guy down. The Shliach Bezdin, you know, insisted that he stand, and Rav Papa didn't say anything. So the Gemara says, Hecha Avin Hachi, how can he do that? From Statman Tanase, the other guy is going to be intimidated. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Papa, Meimar Amar Ihu Ha'osvan. So I didn't mind. Shlucha Hu De Lo Mefayis Minay. So he'll know that it wasn't me, it was the Shliach Best. Interesting. Even though you might think you'd have to bend over backwards. Amar Rabba Ravuna, Hai Tzurbam Rabbanan Vamarz, Nisbudina Bahadi Adadi, right? Lo Liktom Tzurbam Rabbanan Velesev, the Talmud Chacham shouldn't sit down on his own. Mishun de Mechsi Kamad de Siderle Ledine. Looks again like something untoward. Vlo Marnal de Lo Kavia Le Idne, unless it's his time to be learning or sitting down to learn. This we saw in the beginning of the year when we talked about the Chiyuv Hagadah, that if you have a Talmud Chacham who's an aide, right, and it's beneath his dignity to appear, he's the Supreme Court Justice. He's going to appear as an aide in small claims court, right, in front of this you know, local magistrate. Lasude kame lo lezil. Amrav shesha brain ravina afanana mitznina matasako kupa vein darko litol rezil yitol. The same idea of hashava sabeda, except it's interesting that the application is different. In other words, in Haggadah Seidos, it's appearing in front of a judge who is objectively inferior in stature to you. In picking up an object in the street, it's would you pick it up if it were your object? Right? These are just different ways of assessing zilzul in a semi-objective way? Or does it imply that these aren't exactly the same dinam? I'll explain why that's important in a minute. How layitel? Hani mili b'mamona, that's in dinim amenes. Ava bisura in chachme in tuna neitzel negel Hashem, komakom sheishkin l'Hashem, ein cholkin kavod l'rav. That's not true in Yisurim. There's a debate when we say it's not true in Yisurim. Is that true only for Talmud Chacham? Meaning Talmud Chacham has to come to court and testify in matters of Yisurim. The Tumim says if he's such a big Talmud Chacham and it's such a big Zilzul, even that maybe not. That's a Kiddush. Pashta says any matter of Yisur, Talmud Chacham has to come to court. But what about a Kohen Gadol and a Melech? So the Bali Tosis in Sanhedrin say Kohen Gadol Melech, matters of Yisurim, also have to come to court. In the Rambam, it's not clear, And there's a debate between the Lech Mishnah and the Magid Mishnah, the Kesef Mishnah, and the Mishnah. The whole big discussion about the Rambam, both with regard to Kohen Gadol, which he mentions. The Rambam mentions in Perek Aleph, Hilchos Eidos, that a Talmud Chacham in matters of Isurim has to come to court. Then the next halacha he says that a Kohen Gadol also doesn't have to come to court because of his elevated status. And there he doesn't say Hani Mili. So is that because he's relying on what he said about Talmud Chacham? Or there's a hierarchy, meaning Talmud Chacham, Bisurim comes to court, not Kohen Gadol. And what about Melech? Is Melech the same as Kohen Gadol? So Melech we'll get to, in Mirat Hashem, next week we'll talk about Melech. Let me just do one more, and then I'll just take a few more minutes next week to get to where we want. I wanted to stop, make a few more comments, but this also is something that we saw. Rav Yemar Habiyadale Sadusa Lamar Zutra, Rav Yemar knew evidence, he was an aide. Also the Kamida Meimar, Osvino Lekulu, he sat them all down. So he said to him, Almar Ula Machokus Bali Dinamaba Adim Divre Hakob Amida. Everybody agrees that Adim have to stand. So he said to Omerle Hayase Vahayase, Ase de Kavadat Torah Adif. So this is very interesting because, and it's interesting, the Rambam quotes this idea of Hayase Vahayase for the Chiyuv Hagada, not for Amida. So to say, for Achinuch. Implying that there's a mitzvah say to come to court that covers this. But what's interesting about this is what Tosas on the bottom asks, with this we'll stop for today. Tosas I say to cover the Torah adif vim toma kol shkein kvod amelech shreniyachol limchal kvodo v'may ukiwi shimben shetach liyane amelech. Again, shimben shetach told Yane amelech stand, right? But we're saying here that a Talmud Chacham, right, could sit because Hayasev, Hayasev, and Hasei to Kavanat Torah Adif. And in the hierarchy, Melech's Kavod outstrips that of Talmud Chacham, because Melech, Shemochal Kvodo, Ein Kvodo Mochal, it can't be Mochal, whereas Talmud Chacham could. The assumption of the question, of course, this is Tosas all over Shas, is that whether you can be Mochal Kavod is a shiur in the intensity of that Kavod. That's the assumption of the question. So sometimes that assumption is accepted, and sometimes it's rejected. The first answer Tosa says that may be true, but there's a difference between right dine nefashos, right, where the urgency to come to court is greater, even for Melech, certainly a Talmud Chacham. Okay, that goes again to the question about the relationship between dine nefashos and dine mamonos. But then Tosa's second answer is very intriguing. This is what he says in Sanhedrin and other places. Inami, the makom she'in chacham mochal kvodo, right? Chamir kvodat Torah mikvod melech. Umashi yachol imchal mishim de Torah dilehu. Tosa says, the idea that, you know, mechilas hakavod is a shear in the intensity of the kavod is an incorrect assumption. The chilas hakavod just depends where the chiyuv comes from, and whether it's personal or institutional. So the idea is that a melech and a kohen gadol have institutional kavod, and a talmud chacham has personal kavod, and therefore it's subject to mechil. But that doesn't mean that the kavod of talmud chacham is inferior to the kavod of a melech or a kohen gadol. Maybe it's actually stronger. That's an interesting point. The ritva here and the chidush aran in Sanhedrin specifically say about Melech something else. They say Kohen Gadol and Talmud Chacham is the Rabbonu Shel Olam's kavod applied to people. But a Melech is Shetehei Maso Alecha is political, basically, kavod. And on the contrary, it's important for the Melech to show Hachna'a, to show subjugation to the Rabbonu Shel Olam. So basically, these different kavods come from different places. They're not all in hierarchy. They're different principles of kavod, and therefore they're applied in different ways. Okay, we'll finish. I want to speak about Midvar Sheker Tirchak for 10 minutes next time, and then I want to speak about Melech, Amasachik Vekuvia, and Kohen Gadol, and Melech in Shavuos Eidos, getting back to these topics, and then we'll move more quickly.